Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 69, recorded Monday, November 24th, 2008. This is the podcast giving the voice to the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: travel assistant in your pocket and more travel tips. Hey, this week coming to you today from the Travel Commons studio outside of Chicago, Illinois, at yet the end of another busy travel month: Philadelphia, Portland, Denver, Northern Virginia. But I'm home this week, keeping to one of my cardinal rules of travel: stay out of any airport on Thanksgiving week. You know, the TSA is planning on opening family lanes at almost every airport checkpoint. But then what do you do about the mobs of inexperienced travelers once they get on the other side of security, kind of sort of wandering around, getting in the way of the brutally efficient through years of practice frequent travelers? You know, I learned many years ago that it's not their problem to solve, it's mine. I mean, let the families have the airports for the week. Indeed, it doesn't make sense for anyone to travel on business Thanksgiving week anyways. I mean, at best, you get 2 days of business, Monday and Tuesday, because Wednesday is a complete waste. And even then, nobody's head is really in the game. I mean, it's the perfect week to work virtually, make some phone calls, clean up some paperwork, and most importantly, help shop for the Thanksgiving dinner. Following up, you know, a couple of items on that trip I mentioned to Portland earlier this month. My wife and I went up there for a long weekend to celebrate our anniversary. It was the first time either of us had been to Portland. We knocked around the city on Friday, drank wine in the Willamette Valley on Saturday, drove up the Pacific Coast on Sunday, and then flew back on Monday. I mean, we loved the city and had a great time. Good food, good wine. You know, even with the near constant rain, I think we had 3 hours of sunshine the whole extended weekend we were there. But it was still great. I there were a couple of things though to note about this trip. First, we did it almost entirely on frequent traveler points. Now, there seems to be a constant stream of newspaper stories about how frequent traveler points are becoming worthless because you can't ever use them. Now, I'll give you this. I mean, it is tough to book, say, a last-minute flight to Maui in December on points, but you know, I don't find things to be as bad as some of these stories make them out to be. I'll tell you, again, on this trip, it was easy for me to book 2 round-trip coach tickets on United at the lowest mileage level, 25,000 miles apiece, about a month before our trip to Portland. I also had no problem booking the Portland, I think it's called a Waterfront Marriott, at the lowest level point award. So I didn't need any sort of point busters or whatever the, you know, whatever these, whatever Marriott and United are calling them. I just dialed up the website and off I went. Now, I mean, this is not to say that I haven't had my share of frequent flyer frustrations, you know, trying to book flights to Denver during ski season for the past 5 years as, you know, exhibit A. Yeah, but if I take sort of the broader view, I mean, for every Denver frustration, there's been, what, this free, you know, $300 ticket to Portland, or the $8,000 business class ticket to Hungary for my mother-in-law that I mentioned in the last episode. You know, again, if I take the wide view on this, the whole frequent flyer, frequent sleeper thing still seems to be a good deal. Now, also on this trip to Portland, I once again tested my ability to go PC-less, to just survive this time on my iPhone and my BlackBerry. Now, I need the BlackBerry because I haven't yet gotten our sysadmin to allow me to connect our email server with my iPhone, the whole Exchange connection. And the guy's still, still reading press stories about what a security hazard the iPhone is. So anyhow, I had to carry two devices. Now, I've talked in past episodes about my attempts to lighten my electronic load. I mean, this trip was just a long weekend, 4 days, and I wasn't expecting to do any hard work. I mean, it was vacation after all, so I thought this would be a pretty safe place to experiment. Now, the first hiccup was my wife's reaction, even before we left. "What do you mean you're not taking your laptop?" she asked, with just a hint of panic in her voice. "What's going to happen if we need to check out websites for a winery or a restaurant?" I was actually a little frightened by how wide her pupils were dilated, so I packed the laptop as a backup, just to calm her down. And on the whole, the experiment was successful. I never pulled the laptop out of my briefcase, and my wife didn't scratch my eyes out from web withdrawal. We used the iPhone to book restaurants on OpenTable, to navigate to the Saturday morning farmer's market, find directions to the Tillamook Cheese Factory, and send pictures back to the kids of the maple bacon long john we bought at Voodoo Donuts on Friday. Check out my Twitter feed if you're curious about that last one. I even used the iPhone's ability to view Microsoft Word files to review a status report a client sent me while I was walking around Portland early Friday morning. I'd received it on my BlackBerry, but the BlackBerry's ability to view Word documents is pretty crude. I could read the words on the BlackBerry, but I wanted to check out the formatting. So I forwarded the email to my Gmail account, which I picked up on my iPhone, and there I was able to see the document fully formatted and then rang my client back with my changes. There were some rough spots, though. Just that document review I was just talking about, I really needed to compare what the client had sent me with a document that was on my PC. I ended up forwarding it to someone else on the team for the comparison. I mean, I was on vacation. But it did point out the need to think about access to documents stored on my PC. A bigger problem is that the iPhone Safari browser still seems to be a bit of a work in progress. It freezes up and crashes way more than any browser on my PC. I mean, the Wall Street Journal website will crash it every time if I don't hit the big X, midway through rendering a page to just stop it. And last week in Philadelphia, checking out train times to the airport on the SEPTA website locked up the entire phone. I mean, I even had to pull out the white charging cord and plug it into the bottom of the iPhone to get the phone to reset. Lack of flash support is also a problem. I mean, most of the sites for these sort of foodie restaurants my wife wanted to try were heavily flashed, I guess you could say. Checking out the menus was definitely an exercise in frustration there. But I'll tell you, all that being said, I still think the experiment was a success. For a light workload day, or maybe just sort of a quick one day trip over to, say, from Chicago to Detroit or something, or from San Francisco to LA, I think I'd feel pretty comfortable leaving the laptop behind. Shimon Goodman dropped me a line. "Love the podcast, been listening right from the beginning, just wondering whatever happened to the return trip on Lot. You never gave us a conclusion." Now, to remind everyone, in the last episode, I talked about how we had used United Airlines frequent flyer points to fly my mother-in-law over to Hungary on Poland's LOT Airlines. The flight over was great, but when she went to the airport for her flight back, she found that LOT had changed their schedule and she had no flight back. The rest of the story. My wife called United's 1K desk at 2 a.m. Chicago time while her mother was idling around the Budapest airport. A very helpful United agent found a flight back the next day in Lufthansa through Frankfurt. Now, because my mother-in-law was staying in Budapest with her sister, the extra day's stay wasn't a problem, and she had a very nice flight back on Lufthansa. And I have to give a lot of credit to the United agent. That woman spent a good half hour on the phone with my wife digging up that Lufthansa flight and really didn't hang up and didn't get off until everything was taken care of. The Travel Commons mail account has been actually pretty busy this month. Ken Ogle sent in this audio comment on a recent flight from South Florida to Paris.
Hi, Mark. This is Ken Ockel, and I wanted to tell you about a trip I had recently from South Florida to Paris, France. The trip went very well, and I was impressed with something I saw on Delta. I hadn't flown on Delta for a little while, and I noticed that for all the flights I had, both international and the connections, the airline seemed to board much earlier than it did in the past. Now, this helped the flights arrive on time or in some cases early. I'm sure you'd agree there's nothing more frustrating than being stuck at the gate waiting to get out because someone took too long to get their suitcase into the overhead compartment. Now, at the same time, though, when I was flying back to America, I did hear the news that Delta will soon start charging $15 per bag. That will probably produce more carry-on luggage, so my victory may be short-lived. Anyway, thought you might enjoy the news. Live from the middle seat, I'm Ken Ockel. Bye-bye.
You know, Ken, it was just a matter of time before Delta jumped on the fee bandwagon. The airlines used this summer's fuel prices as a fig leaf for these new revenue sources. You know, last month, United said that new revenue streams such as fees are on track to help drive up sales by some $400 million in 2009. I mean, Delta just can't leave that kind of money on the table. Quite honestly, I don't know how long Southwest will be able to hold out. Arnold Heines apparently was drinking beers with some British Airways pilots in Geneva, Switzerland, and came out of that session with a couple of good stories. Arnold writes, you know, you may have heard last January a British Airways Boeing 777 suddenly lost all thrust power and simply dropped out of the sky from about 100 feet, hitting the ground about 300 feet short of the runway. After a thorough check of all systems on board, no real reason for this event has been identified. However, the unofficial reason given to the BA crew is that the British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, his motorcade was driving right underneath the plane as the malfunction started. Brown was on his way to catch a flight to China. Now, part of the defense mechanism of his secured vehicles is a radar or radio scrambling device. Normally, this should be turned off close to airports, but this time it hadn't been. The combination of the position of the aircraft and the exact moment the cars crossed its path caused the ILS to think it was at a different altitude and therefore reduced power. The pilots were quite serious about this, and the lack of any other explanation in the media only confirmed this to them. I don't know, though. Arnold continues, they also talked about the problems with the opening of Heathrow's Terminal 5. Apparently, BA knew very well about all the shortcomings and did a damage assessment what the cost of all the extra marketing and claims would be when they open. The biggest problem was that they had already sold their slots, their gates at the other terminals. Some could be taken back, mainly the long-haul ones, but about 80% of their flights just had to move to T5. So they opened T5 knowing it would be a disaster, knowing that someone would have to resign over it, and knowing that it would cause immense problems for tens of thousands of travelers. To me, Arnold writes, it's incomprehensible. Working in the hospitality industry at what I think, one of the best run hotel companies in the world, these purely financial-driven decisions are just not acceptable. One can assume BA knew the opening day wasn't going to be great, but having known all along it was going to be this bad, well, that's just terrible. Arnold, again, thanks for passing this along. You know, a story in September, 9 months after that 777 crash, said that the crash was probably caused by ice in the fuel system, but that investigators still don't know how the ice could have formed. You know, quite honestly, I think your story or the BA pilot story is just as plausible. I mean, it's scary to think about all the things that can go wrong on those fly-by-wire systems. Hey, if you have a story, a comment, a question, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can always post them on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Comments podcast is travel assistant in your pocket. You know, there's been some sort of mini explosion of new websites offering to be your personal travel assistant. They have sort of the typical concatenated Web 2.0 names like TripChill or TripIt, or very extended acronyms like YAPTA. That's somewhat short for Your Amazing Personal Travel Assistant. Now, Leo Vagoda, a longtime Travel Commons listener, is sold on TripIt. Leo writes, I definitely like the TripIt.com service. I can forward a booking confirmation email from American Express or loads of other travel agents to them, and it automatically generates an itinerary for me with hotels too, which I can then export to a calendar. It's such a simple process. It's fantastic. Leo continues, I also love the printed itineraries they produce. They are so much easier to read than the ugly things the airlines send out, and having the option of printing weather predictions and driving instructions is great. Now, I've been trying out one of TripIt's competitors, TripChill, and I've been trying their service off and on since their launch last August. Now, I'll tell you, at first I wasn't that impressed. You could only create a new itinerary by emailing your booking confirmation to them. And the first time I tried it, they got it wrong, and I couldn't find a place on the site to edit it, so I had to delete that wrong itinerary and then resend them the booking email and hope they got it right this time. But, you know, then again, the top of the website did say beta, so, you know these things could happen. Fast forward now to the beginning of this month, November, and I decided to try it again for this trip to Portland. This trip to Portland was a big travel experiment for me. The TripChill website is definitely a cluttered one. Google ad links, demo videos, but I found a new link, one that allowed me to create manually my own flight. So I quickly banged in my United flights and the Marriott reservations, and within a couple of minutes, I had an itinerary built. I also noticed that I could ask TripChill to notify people about my flight status. You know, when your flight is about to land, if your flight has changed. I already have my trip itineraries forwarded to my wife, but this is a nice way to keep her connected. TripChill also does a nice job of displaying flight alternatives with multicolored Gantt charts showing, you know, sort of alternate direct and connecting flights on, you know, your current airline and on other airlines, even showing Southwest flights, which many sites like Orbitz don't show. One small bit of weakness, TripChill doesn't show alternative flights leaving from nearby airports. Now, as an example, on, say, one of my O'Hare to Philadelphia flights, if I look up at TripChill for alternatives, it won't show me the Midway to Philadelphia flight alternatives. But for me, the real test of usefulness for one of these automated travel assistants isn't in front of a PC, it's in the airport. On, say, your BlackBerry or your iPhone. It's that whole idea of sort of ambient information, being able to get hold of the information when you need it. TripChill calls it a lot of times on their site, they call it mobile situational awareness. It feels a little deep for me, but I'll go with it. TripChill's website actually senses your device, so you don't have to remember a separate mobile URL. And the mobile site is lightweight enough to be useful even on my old BlackBerry 8700 running on T-Mobile's rather slow edge network. It quickly and cleanly displays departure and arrival status and current weather at both ends of the flight. And if you've forwarded your flight and hotel confirmations to TripChill, and I will tell you that the input accuracy seems to have improved over the past few months, it will also display those all-important reservation and confirmation numbers that we discussed in the last episode's travel tips topic. After it's all said, though, sites like TripIt and TripChill, I don't know, they don't offer much new functionality. Now, although I will give one caveat around TripChill's flight alternatives, I haven't seen it done that well anywhere else. Instead, these sort of pocket travel assistants, they offer really convenience. Forward a couple of emails to them, and presto, you have access from your mobile device to an integrated itinerary with real-time flight status. Now, of course, I already had my flights downloaded into my Outlook directly from the airline website and was already getting real-time status emails or text messages from the airlines. But, you know, for many travelers, these sites offer convenience. One place to go to see everything. Status, gate information, res number, weather, driving instructions, and with good mobile accessibility. and they're free. It's a much better deal than, say, the $4.99 flight status iPhone app recently plugged by the New York Times. All that being said, I don't think I'm going to give up any of my current tools anytime soon. On a recent trip to Denver, I found Southwest's text message updates much quicker than TripChill's. But I do think that TripChill's mobile website is a nice addition to my travel toolbox. Second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, more travel tips. Kind of like more cowbell, right? Following up on last episode's topic, some listeners wrote in with their own travel tips. One listener described what I called it sort of the classic divide and conquer strategy that, you know, I've used with my family many times. This listener writes, "When the missus and I fly together on vacation and we both have to check bags, we each put half of our own stuff in the other suitcase. That way, if one bag gets lost and the other one makes it, which has happened more often than you'd believe, neither of us is completely out of luck. We'll have at least half of our stuff, which makes it easier to manage until the airline coughs up the other bag." I'll tell you, that works well as long as you can negotiate that half with your wife, and that sometimes is a challenge for me. Another listener saw value in an often overlooked hotel amenity. I always have one or two hotel sewing kits in my bag, the ones with the pre-threaded needles. If I pop a shirt button or snag a seam rushing to get dressed, I don't want to spend 10 minutes trying to thread a needle. I just grab a needle out of the kit and start working. Ian Morgan, though, wins the prize for what I will call the most elegant and the most useful travel tip. Ian writes, "I am a UK-based traveler, but have mainly been doing long-haul trips. Recently, though, I've been doing a bit more domestic and EU trips and can sympathize with your problems with remembering room numbers after having a long time away. I always type my room number into my phone and hit dial and then hang up. It's then in your call log if you need it. Ian, I tell you, you have solved the problem for me. I started to use that tip the next day after you posted it on the Travel Commons website, and it has been a lifesaver a couple of times. So thanks to Ian and the others for taking the time to share your tips. And as more of them come through, I'll read them on future podcasts. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 69. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music, again, is off the Magnatune label. Flow of No by Twilight Archive. Violent and Beautiful by The Union Trade. And from Lizzie, the song titled Me. This is a first for Travel Commons. I was able to pronounce all the artists and all the song titles without any sort of verbal butchery, which should make it much easier to find them if you like them at magnatune.com. But as always, you can find links in the show notes. Again, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, moan, groan, cries of anguish, any sort of voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send me emails. Ken, thanks very much for the audio file, and thanks to everyone who continues to post comments on the website. Appreciate the time and the effort. Makes it easier for me to get this podcast out. And until the next podcast, until we talk again, travel safely. Have a good Thanksgiving. Thanks for stopping along by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now. Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer.
And when the tears start falling, I am.